Thanks.
Today is April 27th, 2017. This is Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. Today is informational hearing or a continuation of the informational hearing on behavioral health programs. We have four individual presentations up today. But before we do that, Representative Alonso Leon, we have a special guest that everybody would like to know about.
We do. Since this is Bring Your Child to Work Day, I thought I don't have children, but I love my nieces and nephews. And so today we have Emma Garcia here with us. She's my niece. She's the youngest female out of my siblings who have children. And so everybody, this is Emma. Emma, this
awesome,
is everybody.
Everybody, what you cannot see is that she has a pen and a notepad and is prepared for this meeting. So
excellent.
So with that said, we'll go ahead and bring up our first presenter, which is Stan Gilbert, Chief Executive Officer for the Klamath Basin Behavioral Health. And we are starting about 5 minutes late, but I believe each presenter or group has about 20 minutes, including times for questions, so we can get out of here when we need to. So please begin when you're ready.
Good morning. My name is Stan Gilbert. I'm the Mental Health Director for Klamath County, and I'm the CEO of an organization called Klamath Basin Behavioral Health. We're a nonprofit community mental health center, although we didn't start out that way. And that's, I think, why I'm here today, to tell you that story. In 2012, the Oregon legislature set forth its plan to create the global budget-based CCO system that we have today. I think it's been very successful. But we didn't have a CCO in Klamath for another 18 months after that. And there are reasons for that. There was some infighting about what the future direction of public health care in Klamath ought to be. There was political disagreement. There was a lot of anxiety and angst over what the future might hold. As Klamath held off on assigning a CCO or supporting a CCO, the former managed care system began to fall apart. The mental health organizations that were in place under the old carve-out system were closing their doors. In Klamath County, all of the behavioral health services went to open card fee-for-service because there was no managed care system. That created a lot of anxiety for the community, for the county-run mental health department. And in June of 2013, our county informed Oregon Health Authority that they were giving up operations of their county-run mental health department, and they wanted to relinquish their local mental health authority status. Well, I had attended work sessions with the Board of County Commissioners for about a year prior to that decision, and with some other CCO representatives. And we could see the handwriting on the wall, and coinciding with the decision from our county commissioners, given support from community leaders, we suggested to the Oregon Health Authority that our organization would be willing to be in a position to take over as a community mental health program for Klamath. Oregon Health Authority came down and vetted our organization, talked to community leaders, and in July 12th, Oregon Health Authority told us that they were going to contract with us to take over as a CMHC for Klamath County. But we had to take over that responsibility by the end of the month. So we had 2 weeks to move from a nonprofit child and adolescent behavioral health provider to the CMHC. We were also informed by the county that they would not transfer any assets to us. So we received no vehicles, no surplus funds, no facilities, no technology, nothing. So we had 2 weeks to gear up for that process. And we were able to do that. Luckily, we were able to hire 30 staff that were still around at the county-run department. The others had left town already or taken other positions. And we were able to lease from the county, we still are, the the facility that houses our civil commitment beds and crisis respite beds and residential beds. And so we took over operation of that, quickly geared up, and were able to assume responsibility for that. Now, the best information we had before taking over as a CMHP was that the county-run department delivered about services to about 800 to 900 consumers in the year prior us taking over. Since then, we've been busy. We've added mobile crisis team, we've added ACT, we've added jail diversion services, we've put staff into elementary, middle, and high schools in our community. We have embedded staff in our Department of Corrections and are delivering co-occurring behavioral health and substance abuse treatment services to post-prison supervision and early release consumers that under their supervision. We've put, oh, by the way, we've reduced recidivism among that population by 35%. We've put staff into the jail. We've established a mental health court. And other community services. In the last 12-month period, in contrast to the 800 to 900 consumers that the county mental health department seen, in the last 12-month period, we've provided services to about 8,100 individuals in Klamath County. And about 4,000 of those are members of our CCO, which is about 25% of their enrollment currently. So it's been quite a ride for us. We've been very busy. I think our situation is very unique down there. I'm not sure that it's a great example that could be applied to other counties because of how unique it was, but that's what's happened. We have had a long relationship with our CCO that started long before they became a CCO. In fact, back in 1997, when the original fully capitated health plans and mental health organizations were started in that carve-out model that preceded what we have now, our current CCO is in a fully capitated health plan, providing supervision and managed care on the medical side. We joined forces with them back in 97 and submitted an integrated application to provide an integrated behavioral health and medical plan for Klamath County. Our application wasn't accepted in 97, but we've been collaborating since then on delivering integrated services in Klamath. We finally had the opportunity to do that when our CCO was established. So we go back a long ways. In fact, our CCO asked me to help them write their mental health plan for their CCO application, and we've been working pretty closely since then. Our CCO has took some of their transformation plans when they started up. We used those monies to establish a youth respite facility, which has been very successful to us on a local level. We send very few people out of the area. We are very low utilizers of more expensive residential treatment and other kinds of higher cost services because of that facility. And if you checked our utilization rates for out of the area residential treatment, they're very low. They've also worked with us to establish a ACT, assertive community treatment model, wraparound model, and other services. And that's all been done in collaboration with them as payer and us as a service provider. We're not the only service provider for Medicaid, but we deliver about 95% probably of all the mental health care in Klamath. I think it's important, too, for me to explain that in most of the geography of Oregon, rural areas, community mental health program is much more than just a specialty care provider. It's true that we deal with specialty services. We're responsible for the civil commitment process and acute care, and a lot of the really high-end, high-acuity services are delivered to people who are very ill. But in our area, we're also the primary behavioral health care provider. In fact, I checked this before I came up yesterday. 40% of our cases at our agency are delivered to lower acuity, lower risk cases. Only 16% of the people we see are very high acuity, very high risk cases, the very sick people. So issues like family therapy, anxiety, simple anxiety, simple depression, simple adjustment disorders, those kind of lower acuity cases, we do the bulk of that work in our community. And I know that's true in most rural areas of the state. In fact, in many counties, there are no other providers. There are no licensed, qualified mental health professionals other than those attached to the CMP, CMHP, in most of the rural counties. So we are not just specialty providers. And I'd like to make the case that for us to do the work that we do, it's crucial that we're integrated with our CCOs. It's crucial that we engage in joint planning with them. Things don't get done in our communities unless we're working together. Klamath County has a lot of its own issues. I'm sure you get to read about them in the Oregonian often. But at the same time, we're amazingly collaborative. And when there's a social issue or a problem, communities like us come together. Community leaders put their heads together and we solve problems. Our closest neighbors are Medford to the west, that's about 80 miles. Bend to the north, that's about 140 miles. We have to solve our own issues. We're a long way from Salem. I know that because I drive it two or three times a month. And we have to figure out how to solve our own issues. And we're pretty good at that, I think. It's one of the things that kept me here. I moved here from Los Angeles to Klamath 30 years ago. I left a job where I was vice president of a community mental health program that covered 2 million lives in the San Fernando Valley, and have felt like I've been able to have way more impact in Klamath than I ever would have had in working in Southern California, and that's one of the reasons why I've stayed there so long. And one of the reasons why I've stayed there so long is because we're able to get stuff done, and that's pretty appealing to a provider. So we work very closely with our CCOs. In fact, I was on a phone call with them at 7 o'clock this morning before I walked in here to present to you guys, working on a plan for setting up alternative payment methodology, payment systems for providers. And we wouldn't have a lot of the things that we've developed over the last few years if it hadn't been for their support, their willingness to pay for those services, their encouragement to start new programs and to fund those programs. And that's a big part of what we do. Some of the other ways we've collaborated with our CCO, we have an initiative in Klamath called Klamath Promise, and that is a program that's focused on increasing high school graduation rates. You wouldn't think that's traditionally a CCO or a healthcare issue, but we're pretty clear that we can improve the health of our community and address those social determinants of health by increasing our graduation rates. So we've started a big campaign to make that happen. And there are a variety of other issues like that we're working on. We have another program that's setting up business incubators to try to keep OIT grad students to stick around and develop businesses in our community. That's been supported largely by both our behavioral health center and our CCO in terms of planning and developing that. Again, we recognize that we create a healthier community by branching out outside the traditional realms of healthcare. And again, the CCO has supported that. I purposely didn't bring a PowerPoint presentation. I thought I'd just try to engage in a conversation with you folks. I suspect you might have questions for me, and I am glad to take any questions you might have.
All right. We'll start off with Senator Hayward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Gilbert, this is a really inspiring and exciting story that you're telling here, and I don't expect you to answer this sitting here, but I'd be very interested to understand your financing model down there, because you're doing a lot of different things, and you're obviously leveraging lots of different sources of funding.
Yeah.
One of the conversations we're trying to have in this committee is, how do we pay for stuff? Because we're a budget committee. And I would be very grateful if you'd be willing to share with this committee. You can send them to Ms. Ames, and she can distribute them, any documents that you're willing and able to share about
sure.
the funding streams that come in to fund the different kinds of programs that you're talking about here. Because I am not surprised that you think that the CCO thinks education is a health issue, because it is. It's very hard to be healthy if you're not well educated. So I'm glad to hear that you're doing all these things, and these are all very cool programs, and I just need to understand a little bit more about how you pay for it. So that'd be really helpful to us.
Last I looked, I think we have 17 or 18 different contracts, including our CCO, County Financial Assistance Agreement with OHA. So we contract with Child Welfare, Department of Human Services, and a variety of other state agencies and other organizations to fund the array of services that we have. We also are able to, and this is will take more discussion, I'm sure, but we're also able to often utilize by leveraging our Medicaid funds to leverage other kinds of funding that we use to braid together to deliver services. So, and I'd be glad to share more information with you about that. I'd be glad to send you any other documentation you might be interested in.
I'd appreciate that. And I guess my quick follow-up question, which the co-chair kindly indulged me in, is that I worry a little bit about your having to enter into 17 different contracts, too, because that's a significant administrative burden. And I worry about overlapping deliverables or incompatible deliverables. And so one of the things I think about a lot is all the different organizations that are involved with providing these kinds of services, and how do we streamline the funding to make them less, so they can leverage more funds as you're doing. So I'd love to have a further conversation with you about that.
Co-Chair Steiner-Haywood, I would love to have that conversation, because you're absolutely right. It is a administrative nightmare in a lot of cases to do what we do. On the other hand, you know, the reality is, if you want to have an impact, you do what you need to do to have that impact.
And I really appreciate that attitude, Mr. Gilbert, but not everybody has your resourcefulness and your tenacity. And so we want to facilitate the ability to do this for as many people as possible. We don't make it too easy, but we don't want everybody to have to work as hard as you've worked to put this together. We want to learn from your experiences. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, keeping in mind with the time, we're already running late. So to make sure that we give everybody 20 minutes. But with that in mind, Representative Buehler, I'm Representative Hayden.
Yeah, a request to follow up on Senator Steiner-Hayward's. I'd also like to see data with regards to the finance of mental health services in Klamath County, if you have them, the year prior to when you took over these services, because it's astounding that, you know, you're now serving 8,000 and the organization that you took over from is serving 800. We need to dive into how that happened, and is this just your a different delivery model, or did you get substantial more funding to cover those, you know, 10 times more people?
And you can provide that information to us. I'm going to go ahead and get to Representative
Hayden. Can you just
when we do this, we're gonna know we're cutting other people short. So go ahead, please.
I would be glad to share that information with you, Representative Buehler, and committee members. Give me a couple of days, and I can get that information to you.
Thank you.
I just want to be respectful to everybody else who traveled here to testify. Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Co-Chair Rayfield. Thank you for coming and presenting. I had the opportunity this last October to go visit all of the CCOs and get a tour, and I went to Klamath Falls, and very welcoming, very nice presentation, very nice tour, and the conversation was mental health. That's what we were talking, what my team and I were talking with all the CCOs about. One of the things that I came away from all of those meetings across our state whether it's in a high-rise in Portland or in Klamath Falls, is that I don't see built into our budget a critical mass, meaning for you to hire one mental health provider or set up one building, you have set infrastructure costs to treat that first patient. And in our rural areas where we have smaller populations and we pay on per member per month, I don't know how you do it. I mean, it seems to me like there needs to be some sort of discussion about here's a critical mass funding for these programs, particularly in rural areas, and then a per member per month. So if you have any information or you have any suggestions about how that might be helpful, you can turn them into the committee later. But I would like to engage in that type of conversation as we set up our budget, something so that you can have basic infrastructure to start with compared to what some of the other counties have.
Co-chairs, Representative Hayden, you're absolutely right. That's a good observation, and again, I'll be glad to forward that information on to the committee.
And thank you, Mr. Gilbert. I apologize. We didn't have more time. We'll call up Janet Carlson, Cindy Becker, and Anne-Marie Banfield. And knowing that we're probably running about 16, 17 minutes now for your presentation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Janet Carlson, Marion County Commissioner. I'm in my 15th year as a county commissioner. I served as a state representative in 2001-02, believe it or not, that long ago. And Linda actually sent me an email and asked me if I would come and speak to you because of my unique perspective, quote unquote. I do chair the board currently of Willamette Valley Community Health, which is our coordinated care organization. I also chair the System of Care Committee that meets underneath that. I chair the Public Safety Coordinating Council, and I serve on the board and executive committee of the Behavioral Care Network. Craig Pope, who's a fellow commissioner from Polk County, serves as the chair of that organization. I brought with me Cindy Becker, who's the executive director of Behavioral Care Network, and Anne-Marie Banfield, who works for Marion County and is in charge of the Psychiatric Crisis Center, which is a 24/7 center. So we were asked to talk about what's working and what's not working in our system. And so I'll just do that very briefly, and then these folks know what the boots on the ground look like, and so I'm going to do kind of at a high level. I think it'd be important for you to know what our structure is. Next slide, please. We have the Coordinated Care Organization, and BCN was a managed care organization that operated mental health through Medicaid for 20 years when we had the other system, before the expansion and before CCOs. And so the CCO is actually contracting with the BCN to oversee and provide those services. We're what in Marion County I call a hybrid system. The county provides some specialty services. We provide indigent services. We help people step down from the state hospital. We do the psychiatric crisis center. We do high fidelity wraparound. We have a lot of public safety and mental health partnerships that we do. But our fee-for-service, our panel of providers, is operated under the BCN on a regional basis, and I've got a slide that will kind of show you how that works. We took, however, this, we got one thing out of House Bill 3650 for counties, and that was this partnering with county government, the written agreements. Ours is over 20 pages long. We listed every service in there because, for example, with the Psychiatric Crisis Center, a couple of years ago when we did a snapshot, 60% of the people who came there were not Medicaid clients. 40% were. Now Anne-Marie tells me this morning that it's flipped. It's about 35-65. But we can't create that 24/7 just on the indigent funding. That would go away. So we have to partner with the CCO. And we wanted to make it very clear from the get-go that we needed to pull these services together to make this happen. The second thing that I think is working really well in our area is governance. We have two county commissioners, as I mentioned, serving on the board of the CCO, and Cindy also serves on that board. We have our health department directors involved as part of our designees on the board. And when Linda said I was in this unique perspective, I don't think I'm that unique with county commissioners around the state because we are elected officials. We serve in a lot of other capacities. I serve on the Jobs Council. I'm involved with community corrections. I'm on the board of our housing authority. And you know, you get the constituency, you know, the massive numbers of emails, and you've knocked on doors, and you've talked to people, and you have that sense of community. And I think that really provides a perspective that oftentimes people who are on the CCO that are hospital folks and clinic folks don't necessarily have that political view or that worldview, and we're able to bring that in that CCO environment. Other things that are working, and next slide if you would, and I won't go through each of these. We're very collaborative in Marion County. We're innovative. We've done a lot of things in partnership. We provide quality programs. We have a reputation for that. We have strong public safety mental health partnerships. And if you go to the next slide, and just do three of them, four. There we go. All right. So on the crisis service side, just kind of building the system, a lot of people think of mental health as being the state hospital. Well, the state hospital is in Marion County, along with four prisons, McLaren, Hillcrest. We have a lot of institutions in our county, which drives a lot of the need in our county. But as the county, we actually help people step down from the state hospital. We operate a cottage on the grounds of the state hospital. We have a strong 370 program, and Anne Marie's been right in the center of that. In fact, I'm on the board of the Oregon State Hospital, the Oregon State Hospital Advisory Board, and we just got a report, and the reason that Junction City folks, the idea of closing Junction City and moving those folks to Salem, a lot of that is because the 370 population, it dropped by about 50% in Marion County because of the work that's been done by this project. So it's been a tremendous help for that. I mentioned the Psychiatric Crisis Center, public safety and mental health partnerships, mobile crisis teams. We have a crisis outreach response team, and you actually have a handout. Emory, if you could hold that up. That you have is a PDF that shows the outline of those services. One of our gaps that we determined was the children's crisis system, and Cindy has jumped in really with both feet as our executive director, and we're actually pulling that together as we speak through the System of Care Committee. Four more. The next area under specialty care, so we have in the other handout that you have shows the Willamette Valley Community Health. It's kind of orange. It's got that one right there. Okay. Shows the panel of providers. So in addition to that, we have high fidelity services that the county provides, employment, housing service, substance abuse treatment. One of our gaps, and that's kind of how where I'm saying what's not working, is we don't have a sobering center in our area, and we're going out and looking at that, and City of Salem is working hard. Chuck Bennett, who's the mayor of Salem, this is one of his highest priorities. And then the last area, we have our early learning director on our CCO board. We work closely on early learning. We have behaviorists in clinics, so kind of in that early intervention stage to connect primary care and mental health, and we're really focused on peers and mentors. But we do have a gap in prescribers, and Cindy can talk more about that. So last slide. All right, so I have just rattled through my presentation to make sure that we could get some time for Cindy and Anne-Marie to share kind of what it looks like on the ground. So I'll turn it over. Cindy, do you want to go first?
Thanks. Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cindy Becker, and I'm the director of the Mid-Valley Behavioral Care Network. So I also have a little bit different perspective. I'm probably one of the few people that has worked for the state. I was a deputy director before DHS and OHA split. I was a director of Health, Housing, and Human Services for Clackamas County for almost 7 years, and I was a vice president for public affairs at Family Care. I was also a founding member of the Health Share organization. So I have the perspective of working at the state, working at the county, working at CCO, and I survived all of them. So the good news is there are no villains here. I believe that everybody is trying to do the best job that they can to try to achieve the outcomes that we are all looking at. I think the important thing is people are focusing a lot on the structure. And from my experience, unless you change the systems that people are operating under, you can change the structure all you want and nothing's going to happen. So I think we expected, well, okay, if we have CCOs and we have this new collaboration, this new structure, that's going to solve everything. Well, it's not. People are working really hard, but there's still a lot of systems issues that everyone is trying to figure out either how to work around or how to get around or how to play within. I'll give you an example. The peer network, we're very engaged with hiring peers and working with peer organizations in this region. I know in many other regions the same thing's happening. Yet, and peers are something that was in the state's in the original statute. But if you look at billing, you cannot encounter peers. If you have a direct contract with a peer organization, you cannot encounter them. The only way peers can be encountered is if they are work working with a mental health provider, some other provider. So everyone, again, we're going forward. We're trying to do the best we can. We're hiring peers. We're looking at how we can spend our dollars. But sometimes the systems that we're operating under haven't caught up with where we're going. We still have systems that are working on the old way of doing business. And again, it's not that the people aren't trying to work together, but it hasn't happened yet. I think, you know, working with the counties and the CCOs, there's extraordinary collaboration. The counties, they are major providers of the system. I was a little bit surprised when I looked at the PowerPoint from yesterday. I heard it was quite a love fest here with counties, but I also know that counties provide actually more than 50%. They are direct service providers. Without counties, there would not be enough capacity in the private sector system to take all the individuals that they serve. They are a very important partner in the system. So I think it's important to also understand the perspective of the budget. I think in yesterday's presentation, it was stated that mental health is 12% of the Medicaid spend. 12%. That's not very much money. That's not a very high percentage. Yet we're expecting extraordinary things for 12% of the dollars. So again, I think we need to step back, look at the systems, look at what we're expecting people to operate in, and understand these are huge culture shifts. Everyone talks about integration. Well, if we just had integration, everything would be fixed. I can assure you that if we go around this room, everyone has a different definition of what integration is. The cultures are very different. It takes time to change that. But the partnerships are there. People are eager to work together. The relationships are there. And I really, you know, I implore you to come in and not just talk at this, at maybe at the CCO level, but come and watch, come talk to providers, come at the direct service level, come to some of these meetings and you can see what that collaboration is. I don't see anybody trying to hold back. I don't see anybody trying not to play. We're all trying to figure out how the system can work together. We've done some great things in this region, and I know other regions have as well. Counties and CCOs are good working partners.
And I'd like Anne-Marie maybe to address the indigent, like who's not on Medicaid that you serve, because I think that question came up yesterday as well.
Good morning, co-chairs and committee members. My name is Anne-Marie Banfield. I'm the program manager for acute and forensic behavioral health with Marion County. And I cover everything from an institution to outpatient services. So we are the safety net in our community. We're 24/7. We have collaborations with our hospitals, with our law enforcement. We run at least four different teams where my staff are in the jail 7 days a week. We're in cars with law enforcement, and we've been working very hard around crisis intervention training and building that relationship so that we're catching folks at the very earliest possibility where they have mental health services and getting them in the door. A lot of those folks don't have Medicaid and don't have any services when they come to us. If, as was mentioned, we have several state institutions in this county, and when someone goes into an institution, they lose their benefits. We are usually that first stop back into services and to get back into benefits and provides supports. As they're coming out of those institutions, we have relationships with those institutions, so we're going in there. Even though we don't get paid to do it, we go in, we make relationships, we make those connections so that they feel comfortable coming to us once they leave, and then we help them get back on their benefits and into services. I have prescribers in my office providing that backbone so that within a day or two, I can get somebody into a prescriber, make sure they're maintaining their medication, make sure we're addressing whatever those needs might be. The issues with us around indigent, and I realize our indigent services, our indigent numbers are quite high compared to the rest of the state, is simply we are on the I-5 corridor. We have a lot of transient folks who move up and down the I-5 corridor, and we're one of the places they stop. Because of our institutions, we have a high number of indigent services that come through. And we have folks who just simply fall off the Oregon Health Plan based on not being able to renew. They have very chaotic lives. They need support. We offer that support, and that's a lot of who we serve. As the county, we are the provider of last resort. We don't say no to anyone when they walk in our door.
Thank you guys very much. Questions? Please, Representative Bueller. Yeah.
My anecdotal experience is that you're having an influx of more indigents with behavioral health problems, Salem, from here intermittently, you know, 1 year to another, but it certainly looks like the population in the central core has increased. Is that just my anecdotal experience, or is that what you're seeing with real numbers, and if so, why?
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Bueller, we have seen a significant increase in the homeless population. And many of the people that we see on the streets do have issues with addiction, do have issues with mental health. We're not quite sure why. We know, I mean, we had a Mid-Willamette Homeless Initiative Task Force. We met for a year. We know that housing supply is a big issue. We know that, Oregon has attracted more homeless folks that are coming from out of state to the Portland area. We also know that some of those folks are being referred down to the Salem area because there's not enough services for them in Portland. And so there's any number of reasons that folks are coming, but yes, we have seen that. We are working on some new and innovative harm reduction programs in Marion County, LEAD, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion, which is out of Seattle. It's reduced recidivism, reduced arrests, and navigators get referrals from law enforcement when they encounter someone on the street, and then that person is referred to services, to treatment services. Oftentimes, folks that are on the streets are what they call treatment resistant, so they're not necessarily jumping at the chance to get into services. So the idea of being able to develop a relationship and help people understand the value of that treatment is part of that model, and we've got a work group that's formed that's working on that. I don't know if anyone else has anything to add to that.
Part of it is Representative Bueller, chairs. Part of that issue is simply when someone's in an institution, and we've worked really hard to, as we've been talking about, reducing some of the numbers around the 370 population, et cetera. Some of those folks end up staying, and part of it is access to service. Part of it is they feel comfortable or safe here, so they choose to be here, and Oregon is a choice model. If someone wants to stay here, then we work with them. So there's a number of different reasons. A lot of times when folks go into institutions like the prison, their families move here to be near them. So when they come out, they're here.
Well, thank you very much. We go ahead and move on to the next panel. So I appreciate being very, keeping within the time frame. Very helpful. The next group up is Mike France, Kristen Dillon.
Yeah, there's just two.
Yeah.
While they're coming up here, Mr. Chair, if I might, you guys have heard a lot of references to the Senate Bill 440 Metrics and Scoring Group. Dr. Dillon has just agreed to be chair of that group, so we are very grateful to her for her.
I volunteered. I don't know if they'll have me yet.
Oh, okay. Let me be clear. Dr. Dillon is on that group and kindly volunteered to be chair, and I think they're likely to accept because she's a good person. So I want to thank her publicly for her service in that capacity. It's really great to have you there.
Good morning.
Begin when you're ready.
Chair Senator Steinert Hayward, Chair Rayfield, members of the subcommittee, thank you very much for your time and attention today. My name is Kristen Dillon. I'm a family physician from Hood River, Oregon. I serve in Medicaid administrative capacity and as a medical director for Pacific Source. Pacific Source is an independent, regional, not-for-profit health plan that provides health insurance for Oregonians through Medicaid, Medicare, and commercial plans. We are the insurance backbone of two of Oregon's CCOs in Central Oregon and the Gorge that we operate through joint management agreements with health councils in each region, which provide the community governance arm. I'll hand it over to my colleague, Mike Franz.
All right. Good morning, co-chairs and members of the subcommittee. Thank you for the opportunity to meet with you today. My name is Mike Franz. I'm a practicing child and adolescent and adult psychiatrist and the medical director of behavioral health at Pacific Source for both of our CCOs in the Columbia Gorge and Central Oregon, as well as for our commercial and Medicare lines of business across the Northwest. I took this job 2 years ago in large part because in my clinical practice, I've become dismayed to learn that if your child has a significant behavioral health issue in the state of Oregon, you better hope that he or she is on the Oregon Health Plan, or else your family's really going to struggle to find adequate resources in the behavioral health delivery system. And even with OHP, it's still a challenge. I don't think that's fair. I don't think you do either. All Oregon families deserve access to appropriate behavioral health services regardless of their type of insurance coverage. At Pacific Source, I'm finding an opportunity to work across Medicaid, Medicare, and commercial lines of business toward payer-provider partnerships in which all our members can access a comprehensive system of care. We still have a long way to go, but there has been significant progress. To that end, I'd like to highlight action we are taking on three fronts. First, the collaboration with community mental health programs to increase access to services for all Pacific members, regardless of insurance type. Second, integration of behavioral health into medical settings. And third, collaboration with our unique regional health councils to implement community-wide health improvement plans. So first, we are partnering with other payers to meet with leaders of community mental health programs, or CMHPs, throughout Oregon in order to figure out how our commercial and Medicare Advantage members can access critical CMHP services. And they offer a wealth of them, and they're very important. These include intensive community-based services, crisis services, specific high-touch services needed during vulnerable times of transition from emergency departments and psychiatric hospitals, assertive community treatment, wraparound child family teams, substance use disorder programs, and services provided by certified traditional health workers like peer support specialists. This will require looking how we can contract with CMHPs on our commercial and Medicare Advantage lines of business. Barriers to bust include the fact that commercial and Medicare generally require service be delivered by licensed providers who can practice independently. We hope our CMHP colleagues will move toward requiring all their qualified mental health professionals, these are the folks that actually do diagnoses, write treatment plans, and provide the treatment. We're hoping that they move to be on a track to licensure through formal enrollment in board-specific supervised programs. This will not only generate a common standard for the professional workforce, but will also open up the possibility of contracting with various lines of business, and thus grant more Oregonians access to critical behavioral health systems of care, while at the same time diversifying the revenue mix for the CMHPs, allowing them a more sustainable financial model. Secondly, we are working very hard on integrating behavioral health services into various medical settings. We've already figured out a fee-for-service payment for behavioral health services rendered in integrated primary care clinics for all of our members, regardless of insurance type. This is something that some CCOs are continuing to struggle doing. We are also the first payer I know of in the nation who, across three lines of business, has operationalized the new Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services codes that support the innovative collaborative care model of psychiatric consultation to primary care that's come out of the Ames Center at the University of Washington. But we also recognize that a fee-for-service model is not sufficient for standing up truly innovative models of integration that rely on many non-encounterable services not reimbursed in fee-for-service team-based care, such as provider-to-provider consultations, morning huddles, and various care coordination activities. Thus, we are committed to developing sustainable, value-based payment methodologies across our Medicaid, Medicare, and commercial memberships. We are just completing work on an Oregon Health Plan grant that we've used across insurance types to look at how we can implement alternative payment models that will support a high fidelity of behavioral health integration in advanced primary care homes. And I did submit three documents. One of those refers to those minimum standards of integration. This grant has led to pilots with Central Oregon Pediatric Associates, a major pediatric provider in our region, as well as the St. Charles Redmond Family Practice. In these sites, we will begin paying out a per member per month amount for each of our members, regardless of insurance type, receiving integrated services in those clinics. We will use lessons learned from these pilots to guide us as we roll out sustainable reimbursement models for integration across provider sites in Oregon and beyond. Yet we also see other opportunities for integration beyond primary care or even so-called reverse integration like behavioral health homes and the developing certified community behavioral health clinics. We have hired a national expert to do an environmental scan of opportunities to put behavioral health providers in other medical settings, such as emergency rooms, med-surg inpatient units, and hospital intensive care units. We know that behavioral health conditions are ubiquitous and that these disorders greatly increase costs and decrease healthy outcomes in patients with chronic medical conditions like diabetes, heart disease, and pulmonary disease. Only by meeting these people where they are, and it is generally not in specialty behavioral health settings, are we going to be able to identify and treat their behavioral health conditions effectively and thereby also change the trajectory of their other medical conditions. So finally, we are working closely with our regional health councils on implementing the Community and Regional Health Improvement Plans, or the CHIP and the RIP, that came out of the Community and Regional Health Assessments, the CHAW and the RAW. I should note that these plans are for all people in our regions, not just CCO members. For example, I'm an active participant as both a payer and clinician representative on two of our Central Oregon Health Council work groups, one on behavioral health identification and awareness, and one on substance use and chronic pain. Out of this work, we have developed practical pathways for primary care treatment and referral of common behavioral health conditions. Again, please see the submitted document that we're creating on the substance use disorder algorithm for primary care. Our strong partnership with our health councils allow for this deep penetration of payer, provider, community collaboration that lead to concrete advances in population health. There's more to share, but in the interest of time, I will stop here and turn it back over to Dr. Dillon, who will briefly address the behavioral health collaborative recommendations, which I also took part in.
So in getting ready for this talk, I had conversations with Linda. I actually got permission to change the question a little bit that we were asked. The question that we were asked related to the interaction of CCOs and community mental health programs. Question that we chose to try to address more was, how do we create a seamless behavioral health system that meets the care needs of Oregonians and fosters health and well-being? And the reason we asked for that change is that while people on Medicaid do experience a disproportionate burden of behavioral health conditions, they are something that all Oregonians can experience. And one of the issues, I believe, with the quality of care in our state is that we have a system of providing care that's very fragmented along a person's insurance status, and also quite fragmented and inconsistent as we go across regions in the state. The second thing is, I know these are complicated areas. I think it's really important to, as much as possible, try to have one conversation, which is why we took a look at the Behavioral Health Collaborative's recommendation and wanted to try to respond to that. So the first recommendation related to governance and finance. You all are obviously aware that how we pay for things does influence the care that people receive in the end. In my experience, it's not sufficient to transform care if you only change payment, but without changing payment, it's very hard to get the care that you want to see. The one caveat, I think, in that area is the recommendation to establish a new governance or accountability model for behavioral health. I think it's very important that that model be established in a way that understands the other collaborative types of governance models already working in our communities through CCOs, through the early childhood hubs, and that also avoids the real risk of resegregating behavioral health and how that system is organized from the rest of the healthcare system. Recommendation two relating to standards of care and competencies, I think Dr. Franz addressed fairly well. Recommendation three is really tightly linked. It relates to workforce and the fact that we do need to have a well-trained workforce. And I think it's been surprising to me as a physical health practitioner where the concept of finishing schooling, graduating, and then doing a residency is very well established. There's actually public funds to help those programs run, matching it's part of how the system works. When it comes to behavioral health, those clinicians can finish with their master's degree and it takes about another year of practice to be licensed. And the way that you go through that year is really quite ad hoc. It really varies depending on what opportunities someone can find. And we are disproportionately relying on our community mental health programs to provide that training. And I'm not sure that we're compensating them fairly. And I'm also not sure that we're actually meeting the needs of the workforce that we need. And so I think a statewide look and a plan for workforce training for behavioral health professionals, particularly the postgraduate training, would really benefit us. Recommendation four related to information exchange and coordination of care. We're in a pretty good place there. Oregon's health information technology infrastructure is rolling out. Our region contracts with Reliance eHealth Collaborative, formerly known as Jefferson HIE. They're now live in large areas of the state. They've just finished, and one of our colleagues served on a special behavioral health working group because there are carefully constructed additional confidentiality boundaries around substance use disorder treatment especially, and they figured out how to effectively deal with that so that substance use disorder treatment can be integrated in the technology information exchange, but in a way that really protects individuals' privacies and gives them control over who can see the information.
I think the biggest issue we have in coordination of care and information sharing is actually people overinterpreting the HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Affordability Act. It's great that we want to honor people's privacy, that we want to keep their confidential information that way, but the fear of enforcement and misunderstanding of the rules and what they mean, especially when it comes to behavioral health, is very much of a barrier. I don't think there's policy need there. I think there's a need for education and consistent messaging from all of us about what providers can share related to behavioral health. Finally, I think there is one area that is missing from the Behavioral Health Collaborative's recommendations. Some of the earlier speakers have gotten at that, and it's a system-level view of what we have in Oregon and what we need. Mike's talked about the importance of work and coordination between organizations for referral and pathways. The other thing that I feel a need for is a statewide vision and details for what does a complete behavioral health system look like. I think the graphic from Marion County is helpful in moving us in that direction. Behavioral health systems are very complicated. There's all kinds of tiers of care and different types of care, and then you have substance use disorder and mental health. And I think it's really easy for communities to have large gaps in the continuum of care and sometimes not even be able to identify them. The other thing we struggle with in rural and especially frontier parts of Oregon is knowing how to scale the system. It's much harder to know how to provide particularly low-frequency, high-intensity services to individuals when you don't have very many of them, but when someone needs them, they need them. And so I think there may be the idea of a consistent model, and then how do we fine-tune that across different types of population so that everyone can have the services available that they need. I think the one thing I would just say also on the systems level, we've sort of gotten at it here, but really thinking about tiers of intensity and population reach. The lowest tier, lowest intensity, broadest population that I think Oregon needs is behavioral health integrated into primary care settings and other settings where people get a lot of their care. And then we need specialty mental health services for people who need longer-term therapy that are available across communities where people have a choice of providers and hopefully where the providers accept multiple types of insurance. So if someone's insurance changes, they don't have to change therapists. And then we need the higher intensity services, the wraparound, the assertive community treatment, residential, respite. We need those, and in many ways, those need to be more focused because community can't support too many of them. And again, Oregonians of any health insurance type need to be able to access those services. All right, all in there. I'm happy to take your questions.
We'll take one question and then we'll move on to the panel, keeping in mind our time. Representative Alonso Leon.
Thank you, Chair. My question is, do we have examples of an ideal system that's currently working somewhere in this country that we can duplicate here? In respect to specialty mental health, we talked about the importance of having culturally specific mental health experts to work with our growing diverse communities.
On the first one, I'll say I've recently been looking at Vermont, and their state has come up with a blueprint for how do you use social determinants of health and adverse childhood experiences to really inform everything you do at the state level, but especially their healthcare delivery system and integrating behavioral and physical health, but using that to inform the services, and that a lot of what needs to be done is actually outside healthcare. Behavioral health is certainly an important part of that, but it's bringing those systems together with an underlying understanding of trauma that's driving most of the conditions that we're seeing. So that's an example that I try to look at.
Thank you. Co-chair Steiner Hayward, Rayfield, Representative Alonso Leon. No, I think we need to go find one. I think we need to go find a state where behavioral health is working well. This is an area where Oregon has not excelled. I'm sad about that. I'm embarrassed. I'm very motivated by that because this is crucially important for the well-being of our state. So I am not aware of states that have the system or where we would go find the roadmap. I think it would be really useful as at least a template or a place to start. I do also agree with your comments about the importance of culturally specific services. I know we are specifically working on a request for proposals with that in mind.
looking at the diversity within our CCOs and how to provide people services that allow them, when that's what they want, to receive them in a culturally specific manner.
Thank you.
Thank you both. And we'll go ahead and bring up Janet Meyer, Maggie Bennington-Davis, and Mary Rumbo. We have about 15 to 20 minutes left.
Okay, great. Thank you, Co-Chairs Steiner Hayward and Rayfield, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Janet Meyer. I am the Chief Executive Officer of HealthShare of Oregon. We are the largest of the 16 coordinated care organizations, and we serve Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties. So thank you for this opportunity to share our story. I really enjoyed listening to Director Saxton's testimony yesterday and the lively engagement of the committee in the conversation. It was very heartwarming to hear that. I also learned that I need to do a better job marketing HealthShare's accomplishments to Director Saxton, because we have been so busy focusing on the work that we needed and wanted to do that I don't think we remembered to tell people about some of the progress and accomplishments we've made. In fact, HealthShare's Pathways program aligns with Director Saxton's aspirations and directly supports the recommendations of the Behavioral Health Collaborative. You will see that our story really does illustrate the collective power of working together for the benefit of a community. Our transformation journey began with the CCO vision, but it was really fueled by a very talented and dedicated group of partners and stakeholders in our town. So at HealthShare, we were very lucky to work with three very innovative counties. Our community members have access to vital safety net services because of the work of our counties. And you know, regardless of a person's insurance status, they're able to serve our communities very well. HealthShare is also lucky that each of our counties were founding members of our organization. They sit on our board of directors. And we also work closely with the counties in other areas such as public health and long-term care. When our CCO began in 2012, there were three counties running three separate managed Medicaid mental health plans. This was a little administratively complex and cumbersome for providers and members as well. In addition, we had a situation where the substance use funding was, a lot of it was in physical health care as opposed to in the mental health care. So we had this bifurcated funding arrangement that really drove a bifurcated delivery system that didn't always function very well together. It was difficult to treat members with co-occurring disorders. So it was really clear to us that we had an opportunity to create a very effective framework, eliminate some duplication, and work in identifying and achieving improvements in outcomes for our clients. Now, I do need to confess that I am a fan of our counties. They are very good at creating and implementing systems of care. They understand that mental health and substance use disorder, by necessity, is a chronic care model. It's not an acute care model. They intuitively understand the role, and they're very comfortable in the role working with peers and people with lived experience. They are intimately connected to, and they're very much impacted by, our members' use of criminal justice system, the impact on public health, and the foster care system. So when a managed care plan, and I come from managed care originally, talks about a system of care, what you're really talking about is a collection of contracted providers that form a network that deliver medical care needs. That's what a system of care is in managed care. When a county talks about a system of care, what they are describing is an actual system that functions across settings and between organizations to meet the needs of their residents. It's not a collection of contracts. It's actually a public trust that relies on community-based providers, in our situation, to support a safety net for our populations. Aligning our work and combining our funding was a no-brainer for HealthShare. Having said that, we knew that we had to do something about having these three county-based programs, having addictions funding and physical health, and a lot of complexity, unnecessary complexity. So on July 1, 2016, our county partners, our physical health plan partners, and our other stakeholders created HealthShare Pathways, which is an integrated regional behavioral health system of care. There is a centralized region-wide network for mental health and substance use disorder that serves the CMHP and the HealthShare CCO. There's one provider directory, centralized credentialing. We have really aligned the CMHP system of care with the CCO. The provider payment arrangements are now standardized, as are utilization management protocols. The risk for the entire system is shared across counties, which is quite innovative, but it allows the funding to follow the needs of the members and not get trapped in arbitrary county lines. Investments in the community are determined regionally according to the needs of the entire system. It's managed through a partnership that includes the three counties. HealthShare provides administrative or back office functions, and it's governed by a regional steering committee that includes physical health, mental health, and now dental health has joined our steering committee. So let me be clear. I'm not talking about just a little bit of administrative fiddling in the structure, and we call it transformation. That's not what happened in HealthShare. We intentionally combined funding for addictions and mental health so we could create a true co-occurring system. We intentionally partnered with and aligned with the CMHP because we recognize that our clients go often on Medicaid and that the system of care needs to be there. We have made a commitment to the safety net, and we think it's irresponsible for a CCO to come in and disrupt the safety net that the counties have created. Our CCO has already organized our mental health and addiction system in partnership with the counties to reflect the design and principles found in the behavioral health system, behavioral health collaborative recommendations. It's nice because now we can focus on really moving the needle and improving the outcomes for our members. Yesterday, Representative Bueller asked if Central Oregon or Hood River models are scalable for the state. And I think HealthShare's model would indicate that the answer is yes. With the CMHP, the CCO, and the nonprofit community providers aligning with a framework that includes financial transparency. And with financial transparency, you can get true accountability in how the Medicaid funds are being invested. We did this work without statutory directive, without the OHA using contractual influence to get the work done. We did this work because it's better for our community. But I will let Mary tell you more about the experience of being a CMHP and working with a CCO.
Co-chairs Steiner Hayward and Rayfield, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Rumbaugh, and I'm the director of Clackamas County Behavioral Health Division. I function as both the Community Mental Health Program CMHP director, as well as one of the three counties that function as HealthShare Pathways, HealthShare's Behavioral Health Plan. I am testifying jointly with HealthShare of Oregon at their request. All three counties in the metro area were previous Medicaid mental health programs, so right from the inception of HealthShare, we saw the opportunity to coordinate the mental health benefit across the HealthShare delivery network. We did this by aligning our mental health utilization guidelines, authorization structures, and rate payments. We collaboratively with the mental health providers moved to an alternative payment model, case rates, for outpatient mental health services. Also, from the inception of HealthShare of Oregon as a coordinated care organization, there was recognition of the value of the county system of care, and in particular, the safety net services. HealthShare has been a long-standing financial contributor to our safety net budget. As a county system of care, we ensure that individuals struggling with mental health and substance use challenges receive crisis services through our 24/7 crisis line, 7-day urgent mental health walk-in clinic, or through our behavioral health unit responding 7 days a week with law enforcement. The behavioral health unit is currently being expanded to ensure 24/7 mobile crisis response across the county in response to the U.S. DOJ agreement with Oregon Health Authority. With all of these services, individuals are served regardless of insurance or ability to pay. HealthShare and the counties also recognize that members roll on and off Oregon Health Plan. The counties hold the same contracts with the same network of mental health and substance use providers for individuals who are uninsured. So if individuals do roll off come off the Oregon Health Plan, they don't lose the necessary treatment services that they're currently receiving. This unique relationship with HealthShare and the counties has also allowed us to leverage areas of specialty, which includes prevention and promotion activities, including training individuals in mental health first aid and implementation of zero suicide, a development of a full network of peer-delivered services for both mental health and substance use, and addressing the needs of our members and residents who are touching the criminal justice system. Last Friday, a few members of the committee heard from a Clackamas County employee who shared her very personal and courageous story of recovery and the types of interventions that finally aided in this recovery: access to mental health and substance use treatment services, peer recovery mentors, and inreach into the jail when she relapsed. She shared with me that a nonprofit in the Portland area, also a HealthShare partner, quote, saved her life, and her employment at Clackamas County has given her a future that she didn't always see for herself or her children. She is now employed as a case manager doing inreach into our local jail for individuals struggling with mental health and substance use challenges, a journey she only knows too well. She recently had her criminal record expunged, a 14-year journey. This individual story highlights the partnership of the Medicaid CCO and safety net system and our strong belief in hope and recovery. I wish I could just end my testimony here, but we recognize as three counties and as health share that there was still more work to be done, specifically the need to integrate the substance use benefit within the behavioral health plan. Because prior to July 1st, 2016, the substance use benefit was managed by four physical health plans, all who held the same network of providers' contracts, many of the same providers who also provide mental health services. So for any one treatment provider, they could hold up to seven contracts with the physical and behavioral health plans that make up HealthShare of Oregon. That does not include the three county contracts for those individuals who are uninsured. We knew we needed to do better, better for the members who were struggling to navigate a fragmented system and better for the delivery system. So as Janet noted, on July 1st, 2016, the substance use benefit, including outpatient and detox services, was integrated into HealthShare pathways. Similarly to what occurred starting in 2013 with the mental health benefit alignment across the three counties, the substance use benefit was aligned as well, including regional utilization guidelines, authorization structures, and rate payments. This both creates administrative simplification for the providers, but more importantly, a consistent treatment experience for the member, regardless of where or by whom they receive their treatment from. From a member's perspective, they now receive one provider list for both mental health and substance use treatment services across the three-county region, allowing them to self-refer to a provider of their choice, regardless of whether that provider is in their home county. It may be more convenient to seek services closer to work, for example. Also, on July 1st, 2016, all contracts for mental health and substance use services were centralized at HealthShare, as well as credentialing, creating another administrative simplification for the large network of providers. The risk for the entire specialty behavioral health system of care is mutualized across the three county partners so that the funding follows the member, resulting in better integrated care for the members and a level of transparency that I believe is unparalleled in any other system I have seen. Once again, I wish I could end here, but we actually still have more work to do to ensure the success for both HealthShare members but for the residents of Oregon. Suicide prevention, we continue to lose too many people to suicide. How many deaths by suicide is acceptable? We would say any more than zero is unacceptable. Opioid deaths, most are preventable. It will take a true integrated system of care and partnership with community partners, including public health, to address the opioid epidemic. Expansion of peer-delivered services to children and families and those struggling with mental health and substance use, expansion of culturally specific behavioral health services, and payment equity for mental health and substance use treatment. Everything that I have shared today highlights an integrated behavioral health system of care that is a true partnership between a CCO and a county. It is the common vision and mission for a recovery-oriented system of care which supports our members and county residents that ensures this true and transparent partnership that I also believe does not have to be unique to just HealthShare and the three counties. Thank you for your time.
Co-Chairs Steiner Hayward and Rayfield and members of the committee, my name is Dr. Maggie Bennington Davis, and I currently serve as Chief Medical Officer for HealthShare of Oregon. I attended medical school and completed psychiatry residency at OHSU, and I was a hospital and community provider for 25 years before joining HealthShare. I represented HealthShare in the recent OHA Behavioral Health Collaborative, and during that process, I reflected that Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties and HealthShare already have used the CCO structure and potential to address systemic and operational barriers for a functional behavioral health system infrastructure and to give providers a simpler, more supportive contracting and oversight process. Through the process described by my colleagues, we've already developed a single point of shared accountability through a regional governance model. We've taken complex systems and organizations built on the strengths of each and emerged with what I think are the right prerequisites for incorporating and coordinating other systems, such as primary care providers, criminal justice, and schools. The Behavioral Health Collaborative Report furthermore recommends we focus on prevention, childhood, substance abuse, and trauma, all of which HealthShare has and is doing in partnership with our counties. When HealthShare first analyzed those who used the most services and were the highest cost members. We asked them to describe what had happened to them throughout their lives. We found that often these folks were born as a result of unintentional pregnancy into unstable and chaotic families. Some had been in and out of the foster child system early in life. Many had been neglected or abused. Most did not have childhoods that helped them to develop skills to prepare them to be successful in school. Most had various erratic behaviors or depression or suicidal tendencies that led them to require services and specialty mental health if they could get access, or to in jails or hospitals if they could not. And knowing that mental illness and substance use disorders can be prevented and successfully treated, HealthShare felt we had to focus explicitly on the behavioral health system in our efforts to improve health. For example, responding to our board's directive to develop a strategy for improving the substance use treatment system, in partnership with our counties, we are concentrating our efforts on making that system more accessible, coherent, culturally competent, recovery-oriented, evidence-based, and effective, with an adequate workforce. We know from our own data, which mirror national data, that substance abuse is a local and national health crisis, driving high costs in people's lives and health, as well as in the healthcare system. Parental substance abuse also drives entry into the foster child system. It's the number one reason children enter foster care. Children in the foster child system have a much higher incidence of asthma, attention deficit disorder, obesity, post-traumatic stress disorder, hypertension, even schizophrenia, than children in Medicaid who are not in that system. So by addressing substance use disorders and potential parents more purposefully and effectively, as well as working intensely with our county departments of human services to create a foster child health system, we are essentially working upstream for those children. By the way, Co-Chair Rayfield, thank you for sponsoring House Bill 2580 and for your advocacy for these most vulnerable kids. By improving the specialty behavioral health system per se, and by partnering with our counties, our early intervention programs, the hubs, schools, and communities, we intend to ensure the health of future Oregonians. It's a privilege to address you this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Malmstrom.
Thank you, Co-Chair. This is directed maybe Ms. Meyer. You mentioned payment parity and other workforce issues. What would be one thing that we could do immediately to address those concerns here in Oregon?
Chair Steiner Hayward and Rayfield, Representative Malmstrom, thank you for asking that question. We have been focused very intentionally on alternate payment arrangements for our behavioral health and addiction system so that we can get the outcomes we need for our clients. And in preparing the analysis to make recommendations, we see a number of issues that could be addressed fairly quickly. One is there's a huge wage disparity between people who are serving our clients in mental health and addictions versus people who are serving our clients in physical health. And this is not related to licensure or education levels. It's simply a disparity. They are paid approximately, our economic analysis indicates, between 15% to 20% less. In that. So, you know, you're kind of getting what you're paying for. You're paying a lot less for the system of care in behavioral health and addictions. Having said that, we also have identified a disparity in the fee schedules between addictions and mental health so that a person who has the same licensure status can do a mental health assessment and get paid $100. And if they do an addictions assessment, they might get paid $35. That makes no sense. They're the same level of clinicians. They're doing the same basic work. We should be valuing the addiction system as much as we value the mental health system of care. And that that is baked into the current open card fee-for-service fee schedule to the health authority. We have presented this recently to the health authority with a request to look at this. This is a parity issue. This is simply an inequitable fee schedule that I don't think it was intentional. I think it was an oversight, but it needs to be fixed. And the current proposal to freeze the fee-for-service fee schedule as part of the budget solution is going to delay that correction that we're hoping to get. But that's a possibility if you want to think about it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, we saved 5 minutes extra to get make sure you guys had time. So I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I think there's a lot of questions the panel has, so we wish we had more time. So
thank you
for being patient with us. Ms. Ames, anything before we adjourn? Okay. With that, we'll go ahead and adjourn.